All right. This is how to create a mastermind, a masterclass, or a challenge. You can do a 1 day, a 3 day, a 5 day. It's whatever works. But five is the magic number. And we've talked about that in the past. And so today, this is session number four of our five session masterclass. And we are actually going to be talking about how to price and how to add a VIP ticket. So one of the things that some of the members are doing is that they're putting out a 5 day challenge or a 5 day masterclass, and they're adding a ticket. They're doing it for free as part of the top of their funnel to get folks to kind of tap in, to get to know, like, and trust them. And then as they're going through their week's worth of sessions, because they're doing it all in 1 week, you know, like a Monday through Friday, they are adding a VIP component to that. And it's an upsell. So it can be like $79, $99, something that's affordable for the folks that are attending. But the VIP then gives you all this added value. The VIP might give you a free coaching hour with the facilitator or moderator. The VIP ticket might give you a workbook that maybe you didn't get in the free session. It might give you unlimited replays of all the sessions. So in case you missed one, you could say, oh, I'm going to go ahead for $79. This is so good. And I can attend four out of the five and I don't want to miss it. So I'm going to go ahead and spend the $79 so that I can have the replays of all of the sessions. So it's just to add value to that particular free meetup, that free five session, whatever it is that you're doing. And you can that way create an email list. You can add those to your email list. You can add those folks to your tribe. You can start using that 5 day challenge, not only for your free, which is at the top of your funnel, but it also can be then your first base offer, because now you've got, you know, maybe 30 folks sign up for the free, and maybe 15 of the 30 decide that they're going to buy, you know, the $99 one. Well, isn't that a nice little boost for your week's worth of work? And then if you give away, you know, say an hour of coaching or one-on-one with those folks, if that's part of that VIP ticket that they get, something like that, now you're even building a deeper relationship. Because at the end of the day, it's all about building relationships. And so now you're building even a deeper relationship with those folks. So that's just some ideas for pricing. So I don't know, has anyone else in the group, have you attended any sessions or a 5 day challenge or whatever? And what did you get in the VIP and what did the VIP cost? Now, Debbie, I know you're just recently going through Ruth's 5 day. Did you get her VIP?
No, I did not.
Do you recall what was in her VIP offhand? I know it was, you got another hour with her and the workbook and the replays. I don't know if she's included anything else in that or not, but I do know you got those three things. Right. Linda, how about you? Have you done any 5 day challenges where you've purchased the VIP, or have you seen any of those recently?
Yeah, I had done one at the end of last year, and you may have done the same one. And there was an extra VIP hour after each of the 5 days with additional guests, you know, like high horsepower guests with additional slightly deeper content. Although I will say in that particular case, there was some extra content, but it was a lot of heavy strong arm marketing. So I don't feel that they delivered on the promise quite the same as what they had indicated we would get for the VIP. I don't know what your take on that was.
Well, and that's another thing too, is that you don't want to turn off your client list, your guest list that are attending your 5 day session or whatever it is that you're doing. You really want to be careful with the marketing piece. What you want to be careful is you don't want to turn it into an infomercial where all you're doing is getting them into the room alone so that you can basically try to sell. You have to add the value and you have to make your product and services available. But my preference, I like to grow a little more organically. And here's why. And when I say that, a lot of folks go, what does that mean? Grow a little more organically. I like to put all of my offers out there on the table so that folks know what it is that I offer. And I like to describe what it is and explain what it is. But I don't go into, back in the day, I was in sales and we learned, you know, one of the classes we had to go through was how to overcome all of those objections. If somebody says, well, I can't really afford it, then you had to come up with like 10 things that you could twist their arm into proving to them that they could afford it. And so there was this whole series of how to overcome all of these objections. Well, what happens, and this is just my strong opinion, is that oftentimes when we do that with folks, they're not a true tribe member. They're not really a client of yours. They might, under duress, go ahead and purchase something, and they tell themselves later, you know, I'm never going to do that again, because they didn't feel that they really got the value for what they spent, or they really just weren't prepared to spend. So I like to put all of my offers out on the table, make it available, make sure everybody understands what it is. And then if they want to purchase, they certainly can, but they don't feel under any kind of duress for me to make the purchase. And then I always try to add and sweeten the pot a little bit. And once somebody does purchase, say, for example, one of my masterminds, I will get in touch with them and say, oh, by the way, I'm doing a BOGO right now. You can actually have two masterminds for that price. What is the other mastermind you'd like to be in? And then they're very pleasantly surprised. They feel excited. They feel like I over-delivered and under-promised. See, I over-delivered to them and they're incredibly excited. And now they're sending more people my way. And that's my definition of growing your organization organically. Yes, Debbie.
I was working with a person named Aaron Scott and his wife. And, you know, I enjoyed the free webinars that they were doing, challenges for a week. They would do a 5-day. But I would soon find that they would get to the end of the third session, the third day. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, the fourth day and the fifth day was all about what they had to sell. And they presented it, this is how you can do such and such by using our products. And it turned me off when I realized after a couple, I had to do a couple in order to realize what was going on, that I just went in for the meat and I did not stay for the dessert because it wasn't what I wanted.
Well, and I get that. I get that. And that happens oftentimes now for the big gurus that are teaching 5-day challenges and how to grow your business and all of that. They actually teach that 1/3 of the entire event should be your sales. And I think that's a little much, but again, it's tried and true. And there are people out there doing it and they're growing multi-billion dollar companies. And I'm not a multi-billion dollar company. So what do I know? So maybe that's the formula. But like you, Debbie, I don't feel comfortable with that particular formula myself, because I'm all about the relationships. I want to keep my business heart-centered. I like that my business is growing maybe slower than what maybe the gurus say that I can grow, because I want to have a relationship with all of my members. I don't want to just have numbers. And so that's why I like the idea of just serving. Again, your storytelling is your marketing, your serving is your selling. I like to just serve my clients and work with them and get to know them on a relationship, one-on-one, heart-centered basis. So again, that's my version of organically growing your tribe. And I think those folks will stay with you for years. You know, once they, yes, Linda.
I just wanted to agree with what you're saying. And because you're doing it in alignment with your values and what you're comfortable with and what matters to you in growing a business and what level of importance the relationship with your customer, client, et cetera, is, you are feeling much more comfortable. I think maybe most of us would feel more angsty with that high pressure approach. Mm-hmm. And then just being, it's cognitive dissonance is what it is. And so, you know, even if you're growing a little slower, but you feel more comfortable in your gut and in your heart, then that's okay.
Coffee. Hey, tell him I'll take some coffee. We heard him in the background. Good morning.
How are you today?
Good. So
it's cold out here.
Yes. So anyway, Linda, thank you so much for that, Linda, because I do agree with you and I agree with that. And a good proof is in the pudding, as they say. I was at a networking meeting last night. It was one of our Happy House Hunter groups, and a gal showed up and I immediately recognized her and she recognized me. We met one time a year ago at a conference in Cincinnati and we passed in the hallway. We had a chat. We exchanged business cards and I recognized her immediately. She recognized me immediately. And she told me last night, she said, I came tonight, she said, because I heard it was your meetup. And she said, and I remember meeting you a year ago and I remembered our conversation so well. She said, and you were so concerned about me and what I was doing and how I was doing it and how you could help. And she said, that resonated with me so much that she said, I just remembered you all that time. And that's why I'm here tonight. And that just happened last night. And so I was like, interesting. And so I think your personality and your heart does show through to your tribe members, and it does make a difference. And those folks are true fans. And that's, I think, my goal. And I think that's all of our goal, is to actually build a business where we have true fans, folks that really appreciate what we're delivering, and they feel that we're in it for them, you know, that we're actually there to try to help them take that next best step or do that next best thing in their business. And I think that's the image we all want. At least that's the image I certainly want. So anyway, when you set your prices, I think you have to know your audience pretty well as to who it is that you're serving and how you're serving them and what it is that they can afford. And so one of the best things that I ever did is I wrote my opus. And Debbie will recognize this term from Carrie Oberbrunner. Debbie and I went through, well, and Mason was there. We went through a program with Carrie where he has these three books. Your Secret Name was the first book, and we went through that. And then Deeper Path, the first book, Secret Name, you kind of know what it is you're supposed to do, what your name is or who you are. That it helps you determine who you are in this world. And then Deeper Path is, once you determine who you are, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do about it? And in Deeper Path, at the very end of the book, he walks you through how to write an opus. And it's kind of what your life mission is. It, you know, it's you're writing out from the heart. You're writing out who it is that you want to help, how you want to help them, and why it's so important to you. And then once you know who you are and what you want to do with who you are, then the Day Job to Dream Job book was how to take that information and actually turn it into a business and monetize it. And so when I went through Deeper Path, for me, it was about helping folks that were an earlier version of me, you know, the single mom, the working two jobs, the, you know, didn't have any time. Not only was I working two jobs, but then I came home to take care of a baby by myself, and, you know, and it's struggling with daycare and, you know, finding a sitter when I had to go to work and having a car that I couldn't keep running. And yeah, you get the idea. So I just remember those struggles. I remember when my daughter finally went to first grade, I thought I got a raise because I didn't have to pay daycare anymore. And it was true. And for the first time, when she finally started to school, and I didn't have to pay for daycare anymore, I actually went out and bought health insurance. if that tells you anything. I mean, that's the kind of a struggle I was in at that time, and just crossed my fingers those early years that neither one of us got sick or had any serious injury, because I just really, I couldn't afford the health insurance at the time. So anyway, so long story short, what really, and again, this is how you write your opus. It's what breaks your heart, and it's what really, you know, kind of pisses you off. And so, and that's a Mike Kim term for those of you that know Mike Kim. And he says, you got to know what pisses you off, and you got to know what breaks your heart. Well, what really makes me angry, and I'll soften up that word a little bit. What really makes me angry is that the folks that need it the most can afford it the least. You know, the folks that really need to know how to create some passive income, because I'm a passive income coach, can afford to buy all of those programs and to go to college and to, you know, to, and they don't have the time. They don't have the time. They don't have the money. They don't have the clothes. They don't have the car. They just don't have the means to make that happen. And they feel, and they convince themselves that they can't do it, because they think, I couldn't go to some fancy meetup. I don't have the clothes to wear. I can't go to college. I don't have the money to pay for college. I don't have the time. I don't have the babysitters. I don't have the income. And so after a while, they convince themselves they can't do it. And so that's what it really kind of makes me angry, is that the person that needs it the most can afford it the least. So that was my first part of my opus. And Mason, I'll get to you in just a moment. And then the second part was then what breaks my heart. Well, what breaks my heart is that it's the children that suffer the most. It's the children of those parents. And they don't, the parents don't mean to make them suffer, but because they're just trying to get through life. But it's the children of those parents that suffer, because at that point, I can remember leaving my daughter with a babysitter that I didn't even know. And I just held my breath, because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I don't want to lose this job. I have to have the income in order to pay my bills. And I certainly wasn't living extravagantly. I had a car. I lived in a mobile home at the time. So, you know, but it was clean. It was neat. It was clean. We had everything that we needed, but not without a lot of struggle on my part. So when I finally was at the place in my life that I could give back, and Debbie and I sat down and decided to go through that program of Secret Name, Deeper Path, and Day Job to Dream Job, it just kept resonating over and over with me that those were the folks that I wanted to help the most. And Mason had a little bit of background noise there. We'll come back to you in just a moment. And so at that point, I just really wanted to put a program together that could help anyone that could identify with those struggles. It didn't have to be, you know, the single mom. It could be a young couple. It could be a middle-aged couple that had major medical bills that are now struggling. It could be the retired couple that, you know, always had a job that they couldn't put any money back for retirement. And now that they're ready to retire, they're struggling. So it could be anyone that is struggling financially, that $200, $500, $1,000 a month might make a huge difference in their lifestyle and in where they live. And I've often said a couple hundred dollars a month makes a difference on what kind of a car you drive. Well, $500 a month might make a difference in what neighborhood you get to live in. $1,000 a month might make a difference in your zip code and what school your kids get to go to. So it makes a huge difference, and it doesn't take a lot of income into a household to make a difference. It's taking more and more every day as we see prices go up, but you just don't know the impact that you can have with what your message is. And so I encourage all of you to start from the beginning and really think about who is your audience. And then when you're setting prices and you're setting your VIP ticket to any of your masterclasses or 5-day challenges or whatever you're putting together, price it according to your audience. Don't price out the people that need it the most, because that's where you're going to make the biggest impact. Because at the end of the day, and for those of you that know, my book just published, and it's called Called to Speak, Lead, and Impact. So at the end of the day, it's the impact that makes the difference. How big of an impact are you going to leave on your world? Are you going to leave on your neighborhood? Or are you going to leave even on your family? Because as you monetize what it is that you're doing, that's going to be a legacy and an impact that you're leaving even for your family. So you're going to make an impact across the board. So just don't price yourself out of the market. So that's my spiel on prices. All right, Mason, we're going to ask you to unmute again. And did you have a question, comment? I hope I didn't go on so long that you forgot your train of thought there.
No, I'm not that bad this early this morning because I just had my coffee. I was going to say part of what you're talking about to kind of summarize that, because I can relate to that, is be vulnerable enough to yourself to admit this to yourself. And then that's what will attract others to you. You know, if you're trying to relate to people who you're trying to help, you want to make that connection. And that's you understanding you may not like it. You probably won't like it. Your own vulnerability. Because also, in addition to everything you said, something holds people back is, I'm not worth it. I can't do this. It's called learned helplessness. A gentleman named Marty Seligman, who is the founder of Positive Psychology, it's called learned helplessness. We are taught that. So, and you have to struggle to get out of it. So a lot of times getting people to the next level is also helping them understand they can get past that. So
that's a good point.
That's all I want to add on.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because a lot of the folks that I work with, you know, the first hurdle we have to get over is that they don't think they can do it. Yeah, that's the first hurdle. They don't think that they can take that next step. And so sometimes you have to start that elementary with folks, and that's okay. And I see a lot of that, especially in my lane of real estate investing. I often see folks in that real estate investing lane that they're like, there's no way I can have an investment property. I don't even own the house I live in. How can I have an investment property? And I love those conversations because I can show them how. And then they get excited. So anyway, any other comments or questions or thoughts on pricing and putting together our VIP package before we turn it over to Linda? Okay. Well, with that, we are actually doing a 5-day challenge. Everyone in the group gets to practice. I did a whole session for five sessions. I did the whole five session package, and then Mason did it. And then we had Angie, and she's not on with us today. And now Linda, and she is on. This is her session 4 of her 5 sessions. And then we're going to take a little break. And so for those of you that are on the call, we're going to take a little break in November and December, because both times this event falls right on holiday weekend. And we're going to come back in January, and Debbie is going to be our facilitator in January. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Linda.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Welcome to session number 4 in our 5 session series. And today we're covering chapter 7, which is Connectors Do the Difficult Work of Keeping It Simple. And we've talked about this in some ways in previous weeks or months, in that if you are a fairly smart person and maybe you've had some additional education, you want to come across as a pretty bright person. And actually, we get kind of trained that if you explain something too simply, it makes you look less learned, less competent, less respectable. And we really need to just step aside from that. I love something that Dr. Wayne Dyer said, and it was a take on the KISS method, which the original way that I had heard that was just so offensive. It was keep it simple, stupid. And what Wayne Dyer says is keep it simple, sweetie. And I think that's a great way for us to remember to approach that. There is nothing that makes you look stupid in saying things simply. And we'll get into that a little more deeply as we go through today. Leonardo da Vinci said, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And I just feel that that is so accurate and so wise, because the deeper you get into something, you do see the ultimate essence of it. And that is simple in the midst of all of the other complexity that may be part of whatever field of endeavor it is that you're talking about. In the book, John Maxwell talks about a great way to connect with the people that you're talking to is to use stories or illustrations. And he had a few guidelines that were easy to remember and could be helpful if you're doing a presentation or any kind of speaking or just communicating on a personal level. And he says, you want to include some humor, something that will make people laugh. Also, something with heart, that would be something that would captivate people's emotions. The third H is hope, something that will inspire people. And the fourth and last H is help, something that will assist people in a tangible way. So if you can include some or all of those in a presentation or just even a conversation, you're going to make it more meaningful to the person that you're communicating with and hopefully connecting with. And they're more likely to internalize what you're saying and to respond favorably to you. There's something I wanted to share with you all in regard to the idea of using stories. This is a book that's fairly new. It's less than a year old. It's called The Pop-Up Pitch by Dan Roam, R-O-A-M. And his premise is that he takes the classic hero's journey myth or story format and uses it to create a presentation. And this can be for like your high stakes presentations, like if you were, you know, Forbes 500, you know, caliber, and you needed to do a presentation of great importance to your company, you could use this. And the presentation is only like 7 minutes or less long. It follows the framework of the hero's journey, and you are not a slave to spending 2 months creating slides for this high stakes presentation. You've got it to the human level of connecting with your audience via the hero's journey. And it's very, very impactful. if you're doing presentations of any sort, I highly recommend it. I got the audio version. And as many of the audio versions do, that there's a lot of material. There is like 120 some page PDF that is an attachment to the audiobook. So you still get the worksheets, you still get the little diagrammed examples. And Dan Roam is famous for his little stick figures and his very simple drawings that captivate attention. So it's interesting, it's humorous, it's attention getting. And I think for any or all of us, it could be life-changing in our ability to deliver impact when needed. So I'm in the process of, I've got a rough draft of my first story. It's not the polished end piece, but I think there's a lot of merit in what he has there. And I plan to do it from two different points of view. Like with my story, with the hero's journey of how things went, also from the point of view of my ideal soulmate client, and possibly even from JV partners that I may approach and have them in the hero's journey and capture their attention. So I think there's many ways that we can use that tool. So just wanted to share that little bit with you. You never know where it may hit you in your world right now. John Maxwell, in this book, Everyone Communicates, Few Connect, has five guidelines for keeping things simple. And I thought we could go over those five. And each of us may not have an example for good or for ill for each of these. But if something comes to mind of something that happened in your world, I'd love to have you share it. His first tip is talk to your audience, not above them. He said, anytime you communicate, whether it's to one person or to 100, it's always a good idea to keep it simple. Nobody gives you extra points for being obscure or difficult. He also said that when you talk over people's heads, often that communicator doesn't understand that shooting above people's heads doesn't mean you have superior ammunition. It just means you're a lousy shot. So nobody wins when we're shooting over people's heads. Mason gets it. And this is how I roll. This reminds me of an old joke that says, don't try to teach a pig to read. You'll waste your time and you'll annoy the pig. And so many times we get all highfalutin. We're talking over people's heads. They are not the least bit engaged. We have wasted our time and we have annoyed them. Not to say that they're pigs, but we've annoyed them because it wasn't relevant and we just bothered them. So let's not do that. So my shorthand in certain circumstances is don't annoy the pig. So does anybody have a memory of a time either when they did speak over people's heads or someone else spoke over people's heads and what your reaction might have been at that time?
Well, my best recollection, of course, is always in the real estate realm because I want to learn and I'm still learning. I'm relatively a new investor, even though I've been investing for about 20 years now. I'm still relatively new when it comes to the big boys, you know, that are really spending huge money. And so when we have a speaker, when I go to all of these networking events for real estate and we have a speaker that comes in that is using all these terms and acronyms and whatever, they lose me after about the first half hour. And I look around the room and folks are on their phones. Folks are, you know, some of the gals are digging in their purse. People are taking that opportunity to take a restroom break. And I realized that this person may be incredibly knowledgeable, but they are not connecting with the room at all. And then another speaker will come up right after them and they'll break it down into the most simple terms and everyone is leaning in. And so that was a big aha moment for me to keep it at that lower level whenever I'm speaking to a group.
Totally agree with that. Yeah, Mason, and you are on mute. Okay.
I turn it off. So I have seen times, and I gave two different examples where I've had to follow someone. So for me, my style of speaking to people is I'm talking with you. So if you all were physically in front of me, we've all heard these tips on how to speak to a group, you know, picture them in their underwear, et cetera, et cetera. None of that worked for me. So I'm comfortable. I'm not comfortable talking to the group, but I'm comfortable talking to you. So I will find someone in the audience to talk with. Okay. So I'm looking down, I'm engaging, but then I can see if they start to get glossed over, that tells me how to step back and break it down. I'm looking for the physical body cues. I mean, this whole book is about communication. And one of the stats I love to talk about, heck, I mentioned it yesterday, 93% is tone and body language. So when you're talking with folks, and that's a key point there, are you talking to them or with them, to look for that? And I have seen examples. There was a time I gave, and I'll give you one of mine, had to give presentations as a consultant many years ago. The partners were supervising. The one partner supervising did not like me at all. So it was one of his guys and then me. So we know how that's going to go. His guy got up, read his notes. That's all he did. He read his note cards, 3x5 cards, and had them physically like this. And then I got up and I speak with the folks. I don't know if mine was better content-wise than his or not. I don't remember anymore. I'd like to say it was, but I can't guarantee that. But I worked more on trying to make a connection with the group. So even after the fact, this partner, who I am not joking, did not like me, said, you know what? Mason, you did a better job than he did. I know he's my guy, but you did a better job. And it was about connecting with the folks and looking for that. So that's what, you know, that's my tip for people who are talking or giving talks with people. So,
you know what, that is a great point. And I was just thinking as you were talking, let's say you only gave half as much good content as the other guy, but your people were more engaged. So they internalized 80% of what you said and 10% of what the other guy said. You know what I mean? You were still ahead, even if your speech wasn't better. And I mean, because we're on your side, we think it was.
It was so long ago, I don't remember anymore. I know he had lots of facts and figures, which once again, or I'll give you a more specific example. I sat in a conference in Illinois when I was in the Air Force, major command conference. There was a couple hundred people in the audience. This guy gets up, puts up this slide, quote, "I know you can't read this slide, but," and then went trying to break down the data. And someone actually yelled from the audience, "Then why'd you put it up?" He lost the entire audience with that. He put everything on his show, smart he was, or he was stupid, I don't know which. And yes, I said that. But he makes that comment and it's like, okay. So immediately he's shooting way over everybody's head. And some of the audience, and it was a rough group. We were a bunch of logistics guys, just called him out. So, you know, it goes bad on you if you try and do that. Someone might have the guts to call you out on it. So you don't want that.
That is so true. Anybody else have, Debbie, did you have anything on that topic? And if you don't, it's okay, because there's several topics here. Okay. So that was, I'm scrolling, forgive me. Talk to your audience, not above them. The next one is get to the point. And John had a nice little memory device that he uses. He just asks himself two questions when he's preparing to speak. And that is, what do you want people to know? And what do you want them to do? And if you can get really clear on those two things, it will help guide what you're going to speak to them about. And, you know, the emphasis that you place on things so that you are focusing on what is most important. If you're, go right ahead, Kathy.
Well, I have a thought on that because I've been in different seminars or different rooms where I'm listening to a speaker and different conferences, and I'm not sure the objective. You know, they talk and they're going on and on and on and on. And I'm like, are they just imparting information? You know, what is the objective? And so I like what John says there about, you know, knowing in your mind what you want the audience to know and what you want the audience to do. And I take that a step further is I tell them at the beginning of my presentation. I tell them at the very beginning, I go, what I want you to know, and I just say it just like that. What I want you to know is that I have free meetups, courses, and masterminds that you can participate in. And what I want you to do at the end of my talk is to join one of the masterminds, because that's my bread and butter is the masterminds. And I just say that whenever I'm up in front of a group. And then I go ahead with my story. And I like the pop-up pitch by Dan Rome. I do my hero's journey story. And again, Debbie's been in the Build a Better Business with me for quite some time. And we teach that to craft your story so that you're ready at the moment's notice. It doesn't matter who or when or how you're asked to speak. You always have your presentation. So back to you, Linda.
Thank you. I really agree with that. And you know, if there's two things I wanted to say in response to what you said. One is, if your listener has to ask, what is the point? You've already waited too long to help them understand what the point is. And by starting early to say, this is what we're going to cover today, or this is the gist, or this is the goal, or by the end of today's session, you will know how to, or you will understand, or whatever it is, you really are doing your listener a huge favor because they feel so much more secure about where this is going. So if, even just to be treating your listener as a fellow human and treat them well and treat them with consideration, letting them know where you're going helps them to just relax and go for the ride then. So thank you for pointing that out, Kathy. Number three of the list that John has given is say it over and over and over again. And I believe it was in this chapter that he shared a quote from author Daniel Pink, which Daniel gave in a speech. And he said, three words are essential to connect with others. Number one, brevity. Two, levity. And three, repetition. And then Daniel said, let me say that again. So it always bears repeating. So it was brevity, levity, and repetition. And, you know, as a parent or as a teacher, we've all found out somewhere in our life or as an employer that repeating is necessary. And as marketers, we have found that we need to repeat over and over and over. You know, the first or second or third touch is often not the one that connects or converts. Sometimes it's 11 touches. Sometimes it's 20 touches. It just depends. And so, and like, it's let's say in Kathy's case, she's got her blog, she's got her mastermind, she has her podcast. And so she's saying things over and over again, but any one person may have only heard a fraction of the times that she has made a point or made an offer. So you, and even if you email your list with great regularity, several times a week, for example, oftentimes people don't see that email. It's down in the feed for that day by the time they open their inbox, or they were too busy and didn't open the two earlier this week. So repetition is going to lead to getting the message through at some point, because some portion of what you're saying in those touches is going to get through. But also, let's just face it, when you're talking to another human being, they're often WIIFM land, what's in it for me? They're thinking about what's going on. Oh, I need to pick up the kitty litter after work today. Oh, my husband said something a little bit cross sounding this morning. I wonder what that meant. Or, oh, I wonder, you know, is this promotion that I'm trying to do going to work? Or, oh, the furnace is making a funny sound. I mean, the fact that you are even there with another human being and trying to have a conversation does not mean that they are hearing. So sometimes repeating does bear. And I'll actually share something a little bit later about that, that even repetition didn't help. But that's another piece of today's puzzle. So, and another thing that John mentioned in the book is if you're a leader, sometimes you need to keep repeating so that your team stays on track with the vision that you're trying to pursue, because enthusiasm or attention can wane. They forget the first principles of what it is that you as a group are trying to go for. And so you want to keep refreshing that vision in the mind of your team or your church or your mastermind group so that they continue to remember what it is that they're after. Any thoughts on your experience with repetition? Yeah, Kathy.
Debbie, go ahead. Did you have something to say? Go ahead, Debbie.
I have to admit that lately, repetition has really opened my view on a lot of things. And it's just different things. So I don't want to pin it to one thing, because then it'll show my level of learning. But, you know, it still is amazing to me, you know, the things that have become very clear. And I've learned some of this past week with Ruth taking her 5-day challenge. it has opened up a whole big can. So go ahead, Kathy, what do you have?
Well, I wanted to just mention how many of us go to listen to our favorite bands, and we're offended if they don't sing those songs that we've heard a million times. That's why we went, is we wanted to hear it again. And so I think that says a lot. I mean, look at how they sell out these stadiums, and everyone in the audience is singing along. They know the words, they know everything about this band, and that's what they went for. They want to hear it. And so when I find someone that I admire, and I really think they have a good heart-centered message, and I take a newcomer, even though I've heard the message over and over, if I take a newbie with me to that meetup, I want them to repeat what they're teaching, because that's what I want my new friend that I brought along with me, that's what I want them to hear, is, and that's what I've been telling them about. So I'm actually a little put off if they don't repeat it.
That is so true. And I mean, think about it. When an artist tries to break out of the way that they recorded that in 1974, we're like, we don't want to hear your personal growth and your variation on it. You're going to sing it note for note the way I remember it. So yeah, we're really locked in. Those poor artists, I feel sorry for them, because we really do lock them into a single lane and expect them to live there forever. Okay. The fourth one that John shared is, in order to communicate and connect with people and keep it simple, is to say it clearly. And we've been led to believe that if our ideas don't sound complicated and high-minded, then we don't sound intelligent or credible. And it's a trap that we put ourselves into, and we need to break out of that, because stop and think about it. Actually, it takes a lot of thought and effort to bring an idea into absolute clarity. I mean, you're actually distilling an idea down to its essence. That takes a lot of work. So do not ever discount the value of stating something clearly and at its essence. Albert Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. Amen. So, I mean, if someone as brilliant as Einstein said that, I mean, we should be paying attention. Did you have a comment, Mason, or were you just agreeing?
Both agreeing, and I have a comment. So, as we talk about, I consider myself a writer, and I'm happy to take any topic and make it 20 pages. Years ago, I was writing newsletters or articles for my church newsletter, and the pastor said, no problem, but I need you to keep it to one page, because of mailing costs. Okay. So whatever I wanted to write had to be one page because of mailing costs. By making me do that, it has helped me learn to focus down my writing, you know, get it hyper-focused. I'll give you an example. Just the other day, I have this thing I've done up, sent Kathy a copy. I was playing with QuickBooks. And it's a thing, problem-solving thing I came up with. And there's a section in it, I really wanted to cut it down in size. So I had to work with it. It was originally 168 words. I had to play with it. I cut it down to 98 words, but still got the same message across. So that idea of getting down focus, it does take a lot of work, and mm-hmm. It is very important. So.
So true. So true. And so worth it. And in a tangent, I mean, you were talking of writing, but also I've been learning about short form video on social media, and I'm going to be putting myself out there on social media. And it is amazing to me what you can do in a minute with short form video. It takes clarity, it takes attention, and it takes willingness to cut out a little bit, but get just the important point in that little golden nugget of a video. And you know, once you begin to realize how much you can put in that very succinct little box, listening to people blather on becomes so annoying when they take 7 minutes and 9 minutes and 20 minutes It's like, no, 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 take the time, do your audience a favor, respect them enough to give the message in a short, contained, and manageable form. I have another quote from Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, "It is the proof of high culture to say the greatest matters in the simplest way." So far from being less credible, you are actually more credible if you can state something in the simplest possible way. So go ahead, Debbie.
I had to go get a drink so I could clear my throat. When you talk about saying it clearly and how people ramble on and on and they don't, it takes them 7 minutes to get to their point. But the one thing that I personally have had to deal with is I have grown up feeling like if I don't use the right words, then I'm not worthy to listen to. And I have caught myself many times trying to look for the big word in order to finish to say what I want to say. And I would say that over the past maybe, I don't know, 6 months or whatever, with the more masterclasses that I do with Kathy and speaking, I find that I don't have to use big words. I can make my point very simple with simple words, and it might find more people that it's going to resonate with. And to me, that is significant. And sometimes I catch myself where, yes, I can say what I need to say without using a big word. And I think I've talked about this with Kathy before. So I'm finding it easier to speak what I want to say and not fumble on words. So that's my personal experience that I have found doing more and more so repetitious that I can do this. I can talk better, or at least use the right words. I may, with my voice, it may sound terrible, but it's what I have to deal with right now. So trying to find big words is not in my package. It's just using the words and saying what I need to say so that, because like I said, I have to work with my voice the way it is. And so that's what I have to add. Sorry, Mason missed that.
Yeah, he had no control over when the contractor came, so.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he had to step away and meet his contractor. I want to add to that. I have a gal that she has a huge speakers bureau, and she's all about on stage speaking. And of course, the larger the audience, the more nervous I would be if I had to get in front of a larger audience, because all of a sudden it's hard to know who your audience is. The larger that it is, the more that you're thinking, there's probably some really smart people out there, and I'm going to have to act like I know something here.
Exactly.
And so I would get a little nervous, and she says, I'm going to give you a hint on how to get rid of that. And she said, and you can do that whether you're on a Zoom call or whether you're in the room, it doesn't matter how many people are in your audience. She said, just move your conversation from your head to your heart. Move your conversation from your head to your heart. And she said, and when you are heart-centered and you're speaking from your heart, that you truly want to help the audience get to the next level and your information is important, she said, then it doesn't matter how you say it. She said, they'll get it. They'll hear your heart. And she said, and as soon as you move your conversation from your head to your heart, she said, you'll have your audience captured. She said, they will be hanging on every word.
Well, that just resonated completely with me. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, that is, that just captures it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So many times when someone is afraid to speak, if they can just focus on what it is they want to communicate to the person and not worry about how they're going to communicate it, which is exactly what from head to heart means. If you focus on what I really want you to know, what I'm passionate that you find out, because this is going to help you in some way. Then I stop tripping over myself and how I look and my words and all the things. And I'm just looking at you eyeball to eyeball to share this important thing that is just so vital that you know. So I've been thinking about this whole idea of clarity and communication. And I read a book many years ago that was so good, and I left it on the airplane and could never find it again. I couldn't even remember the title exactly, but it captured my understanding in a way that nothing had before then. And it was about communication and basically like how tricky communication can be. And so I was pondering on that part of it. I'm just going to try to change my screen a little bit. And the essence is what you meant to convey versus what you actually said versus what they heard. And so it's fraught with danger, the whole process. And I was thinking about it and put it in terms of like a train that's carrying a message from you to the other person. And all along the way, there are like these switching stations that can suddenly send your message off to onto a sidetrack, and you have no control over that. In other places, the track might be broken, and the train can't even carry your message to its destination. And so in terms of the what you meant to say versus what you actually said versus what they heard, I was thinking, so you share a message with someone, and they have baggage or assumptions about what they think you said. So maybe it was like one particular word that you used that just sent them off on a side tangent. It's like sending that train off on the rail on a different path. And you don't even know that they went somewhere else. You know what you're trying to convey. You know what you actually said. And you have no way of knowing what they did with it. Another thing that can happen is they assume that they completely understand your meaning. And so they don't ask any clarifying questions to dig deeper. So they run with what they think you said. Another case is that they don't know what you meant, but they also didn't ask. Or maybe they don't care. In that case, that's more like the broken train tracks. The train is stopped on the tracks. And once again, you don't even know that it didn't get there because they basically either refused delivery or just shelved the idea that you were sharing because they thought it was irrelevant or weird or stupid or whatever. They never did get your meaning fully. But you are there thinking communication has occurred, which is so frustrating. And we've talked in previous meetings about being vulnerable. So I'm going to be vulnerable with a story from real life. This is with my sister. Yeah, go ahead.
Before you get in your story, which I'm really anxious to hear, I'm not sure if I understand. You said what they said, or no, what you said, what they heard, and what was the, was there any after that or no?
Well, the first one is what you mean to say.
Oh.
And then the second one is what you actually say.
Oh. Okay.
And then the third one is what they think you said.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, no worries, because if we get clear on how fragile communication actually is, it can help us to be a little bit more successful. But this thing about saying it clearly and even repetition, I did this and just recently found out that communication that I was trying to have with my sister was just really a disaster. Fortunately, it wasn't a huge matter, but it was very frustrating to me. So I have a hiatal hernia because for years I was lifting a 50-pound wheelchair as a 5'2" woman. I was lifting this wheelchair to shoulder height and then loading it straight forward into a full-size truck. So loading and unloading many, many, many times, hundreds of times over the course of years. So naturally that kind of leverage, you know, as a woman our size, we're not strong enough or able to do that without getting hurt. And I did. So the definition of a hiatal hernia is that your diaphragm is torn, it's ruptured. And so there are a lot of things I can't do because I'll make it worse. I'll actually tear it worse, or it becomes very uncomfortable. We'll just leave it at that if I do certain activities. And so with everything going on with my father dying and my mother needing help with things, there are tasks that I'm just not a candidate to help with. And so in American English, I told my sister, I can't do that because I have a hiatal hernia. Well, I thought I was being clear. And on several occasions, I have said that. Well, the problem is that my sister thought she was an expert on what a hiatal hernia is. In her world, people who have hiatal hernias have a little tiny tear and they have a little bit of acid reflux. So basically, she apparently thought I was copping out on important tasks and being a wimp, and that I was magnifying a tiny issue into some kind of a big thing. Well, no, I'm freaking ruptured. I am torn. I am hurt. I am damaged. And so, but the thing is, she did not ask a clarifying question. She didn't say, oh, well, what effect does that have for you as a person with that injury? She just assumed she knew. She assessed it. She dismissed it. She didn't ask. And she shelved what I said and just basically dismissed the value of what I was trying to say. And so I only found out after like several months of telling her I have a hiatal hernia. And she's like, okay, so you have a little bit of acid reflux, big deal. Take a pill, you know? Yeah. And so I was very offended. We could bring out the word pissed off. And I felt very dismissed and I felt unloved because, you know, she didn't hear or register anything about this is an important thing in my life. It affects things that I can and can't do. And so once again, being vulnerable, I'm sharing the story because you think you're saying something in the simplest, clearest terms, but you do not know what the other person is doing with it when they hear it. People.
That's such a good point. That is such a good point. And oftentimes that happens in relationship issues. I know Debbie just went through this whole relationship 5-day challenge with Ruth. And that oftentimes happens in relationship issues where, you know, you're trying to have a conversation with a spouse or significant other, and what you said is not what they heard. and then it goes downhill from there. And we all know stories about that. And so it is so important. And so what's the answer? How do we maneuver that when we realize the other person isn't really hearing us?
Well, obviously I was several months down the road before I even understood that no communication had actually occurred, you know? So, I mean, do we have to take it upon ourselves? If they're not asking clarifying questions, I mean, do we have to like layer on more information? I mean, that now you're going into TMI, right? too much information. I mean, does anybody want to hear about what impact this injury has on my life? You know, probably don't really care. But I mean, it's a reminder to all of us to be more empathetic and to listen more actively and more carefully and ask clarifying questions whenever possible. You know, get out of our own selfish heads and say, well, what does that mean in your world? How has that impacted what goes on for you? How has that caused limitations? But, I think especially with family, everybody has their roles. You know, you're the oldest, you're the middle, you're the youngest, you're the quiet one, you're the one that always screws up, you know? And it's like, even though we've grown up and we're decades past that, we're still in certain labels and people assume they know who we are, and we've grown and changed so much. See, I'm on my soapbox now, but we really need to pay attention to one another.
It's like those singers that we don't let out of their lane.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Can I share it? Can I share?
Sure.
My two daughters, each of them have pools. And the second oldest, you know, she's got a finicky husband. So it's like, you know, can't come over very often. But anyways, long story short, in that 2 weeks I was spending time with my sister or oldest, she told me something that kind of, what? She shared with me that Sandy, my daughter, was kind of upset because whenever I would come over to the pool, to go swimming with them, I wanted to be in the water. I didn't want to eat anything. And they have a pool house and all these snacks and everything. Well, I took a sweetest fish, those little packages, and one of licorice. And I took the two of them and I put them in my bag so that I could eat them later. No big deal. Well, all of a sudden, after all this time, I find out that she's not happy about that. And made it sound out to be worse. And I mean, I'm vulnerable here because, you know, it is what it is. And now for the rest of the summer, I have not been invited over to go swimming for that simple reason.
For some candy.
Yeah. When they have drawers full of this stuff, all these different snacks. And I don't know. It just something that I've tried to ignore. I mean, you know, not dwell on. And one point I thought, well, maybe I'll go buy some sweetest fish and little licorices and pay her back with bags of them. But then I thought, what's the point? You know, I don't know. So I agree with you, Linda. It's what they envision and what they are assuming, and then that's how they judge you. So, you know, anyways, there's my vulnerable contribution. Well,
and I think there's a good lesson and point in there is oftentimes we do make assumptions. We assume what the other person is thinking. We assume what the other person is feeling. We assume what the other person is trying to say, and we really don't listen to what it is. And mm-hmm. so again, you kind of wonder what assumptions, you know, your daughter made. You know, what difference does that make? That, I mean, in the scheme of things. And so I guess I would have to question, you know, what's the real conversation that needs to happen there? And I don't know how to get to that.
Yeah, I don't.
And that's why relationship issues are so difficult, because you don't really know what the other person is thinking or assuming, or even what in their background prompted that emotion in them. Mm-hmm. And so it is hard to connect when it comes I think the closer the relationship, the harder it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like, well, I mean, the kids, they go in and out grabbing snacks all day long. Okay. And I guess I'm being an adult. I'm not supposed to do that. And so, you know, it's just a strange situation. I don't know how I want to address it. Maybe I'll just forget about it. But the fact is that I open my house to them, whatever I have, right? And I always thought it was being reciprocated, but maybe not. So whatever. Sorry. Yeah.
And you really don't know what's going on in someone else's life either. You know, it could be that if you could get to the bottom of it, it might not have anything to do with that at all. Maybe that's just how it exposed itself at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the issue is, it may have, you know, maybe they had an argument over something. Who knows?
Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, because sure. It may not have anything to even do with what you're thinking it had to do with, because that's how relationships sometimes, you know, get convoluted like that is once you get to the bottom of it, it's like, that's not what I was thinking. And you're like, well, I told myself. And I think that brings me full circle to something else that I want to share is sometimes it's the stories we tell ourselves. Uh-huh. It's the stories that we tell ourselves. You know, Mark will do something, and then the story that I tell myself about what he did may not have anything to do with the reality of what it was, but it's the story I tell myself. And so I have to check that. I have to stop doing that. And I've made a conscious decision early on in the relationship to just not do that. I just don't tell myself the story. I just come right out and ask. Uh-huh. Instead of telling myself a story, I just ask and say, what was that about? You know, what's going on? Help me understand. And I just don't tell myself a story.
Thank you guys very much for being vulnerable and opening up and allowing me to share an experience also. And that just kind of helps, you know, get it out, you know, release it into the air. So it's not something that, and it does not, you know, anyways. So Linda, you go on. I don't want to keep you from.
Yeah. Well, I did want to come back to what you were saying though. And you said, well, I think I'll just go ahead maybe and forget about this. And of course the candy, you know, it's 49 cents worth of candy. It doesn't matter at all, but your relationship is being affected, whether because or not because of the candy, we don't know for sure. But I mean, it sounds like you haven't been invited back for a long period of time. Yeah. And that is worth not ignoring. And I was actually going to bring up the exact same thing Kathy did, which is the stories we tell ourselves in our minds. I had learned that principle, I think, from Brené Brown. And if you want to approach them, maybe you could say something like, you know, I noticed it's been kind of odd. I feel like I haven't been invited back for several months or all summer or whatever it was. And you could maybe bring up the candy or not, but you could say the story I'm telling myself in my mind is that you're mad at me about something. Is there something I've done, you know, that I don't even know? And it could at least open up the conversation to just see what it is that is the burr under their saddle, you know? Worth a try, because relationships are so important, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I know with my daughter, oftentimes, you know, she'll go several weeks and I don't get included in a lot of things. And of course, the story I tell myself is, oh, she doesn't want me to be a part of whatever's going on, you know. And then when I finally, you know, get into a place where we can chat, I find out that her whole world has been upside down over something that's going on that has absolutely nothing to do with me. And she just feels confident that I'm always in her corner, and it just didn't occur to her to keep me posted. And so again, I have to check myself and not tell myself those stories until I find out, you know, what the real scoop is. So yeah. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. It really is.
In that vein, you know, I don't think my family knows that the times that I disappear, that I go radio silent, is when I'm fighting the biggest alligators, and they might think, you know, I'm distant or whatever. I mean, this is in, especially in previous years, when I had some really crazy big alligators I was fighting. But they might have a story in their mind, like you were saying, Kathy, that, wow, you know, Linda doesn't call much. Well, it's because I was in a death grip, you know, with really gigantic big problems. And it took all the attention and focus that I had to just to try to stay alive, you know? So you truly don't know. And the candy may or may not have been anything to do with it, but they might be struggling with something privately, or they might just be being petty. You don't know. But until you get them to actually tell you out loud, you won't know. Well, thank you. And I really resist being vulnerable and sharing stuff from my own life. So this is kind of new for me.
Well, then thank you. Like Debbie said, thank you for being vulnerable, because once again, in communication, when you're in a group, and I appreciate small groups, especially, is when one person becomes vulnerable, then it almost gives permission for the rest of the group to become vulnerable. And so thank you for that, Linda.
You're welcome. And thank you, Debbie, for sharing something, because I know that's painful. And it's nice that you felt safe to just have a place that you can open up and share that. So the last of the points that John had in his chapter here was number 5, to say less. And you may have gathered that I have quotes on quotes. I've been an aficionado of saving quotes for many years. Back in the day, I kept trying to find ways to like control them and save them. And I had like a decorative box with a slot in the top, and I could write them on little pieces of paper and drop them in, and at least they'd be corralled. Well, now I have Evernote, so I can just go freaking crazy. And I can tag them, and I can store them, and I can pull them up anytime I want. And so one of the quotes that's been really important to me for some years now is by the author of The Little Prince. And I'll say his French name in an English kind of a way, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. I could throw the big old French accent on it, but that would just be too much. But he said, "Perfection is achieved not when there is nothing more to add, but when there is nothing left to take away." And I think that just states it so beautifully. So saying less, keeping it simple. And in network marketing, you often have so much you want to share, all the wonderful features of your product and why everybody needs it, and all the programs and all the things. And I learned a nugget years ago that I thought was good. And they said, if it is not necessary to say, then it is necessary not to say it. So those are my two golden nuggets on the topic of saying less. Do you guys have anything?
I like that, Linda. Thank you so much.
any input from either of you?
You know, that says a lot. I mean,
yeah,
that almost takes the box and put a big bow on it.
Mm-hmm. I know, and maybe especially for us as women, I don't know. Maybe. I have some tools to recommend, and I think we may have talked about these in one of Kathy's other masterminds, but these are two that are just so good that they really related to this idea of keeping things very simple. And one is the Hemingway app, which you use in your browser. As far as I know, there isn't an app. You use it in your browser, and you can take text that you're working on, like perhaps you are creating it in Word, for example, or in Evernote or whatever, but you can like copy and paste a chunk of text and drop it directly into that screen in Hemingway. And it will look over and find anything that's too complicated, too wordy, and it like color codes for different types of problems in your writing. So for anyone that tends to be too wordy, that's really a great one. And the Grammarly app is also very helpful. When you get that long run-on sentence that just, you know, your reader just wants to say, kill me now, because they don't even know where you're going with that. Grammarly will advise you on ways to clean that up a little bit. So two really wonderful tools. So John had a sentence at the end, or actually a couple sentences, and he said, it may seem counterintuitive, but if you want to take your communication to the next level and connect with people, don't try to impress them with your intellect or overpower them with too much information. Give them clarity and simplicity. People will relate to you, you will connect, and they'll want to invite you back to communicate with them again. So,
great points.
Yeah. So to end where we began, just remember Leonardo da Vinci said, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Wow. And that is everything I have for now. And also remember, keep it simple, sweetie.
I like it. I like it. Yes.
Good Linda, day.
Thank you so much. Yes, this has been a great conversation today. Thank you so much for taking us through the John Maxwell book, Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. And this is week 4. 1 month from now, we will be doing our final and fifth session with Linda. Again, that's going to be in October. And then in November, December, remember, we're taking a little break, and then we're back in January with Debbie. And so
chapter are we going to do in October?
Nine. It's called Connectors Inspire People.
Thank you.
Perfect. So with that, we are going to go for today, and we'll see everyone next month. So put it on the calendar. You can always go to kathybinner.com and scroll down to the calendar to find all of our meetups. All right. See everyone later. Bye.
Thanks, Linda. Bye. Bye.